the past.
Werewolves.
The present.
Vampires.
The future.
And lost souls.
You are listening to COL Movies.
I'm gonna make him an offer again.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
Go ahead. Make him my day.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
May the force be with you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand spanking new reel of COL Movies. This is reel number 21, and I want to get right to it, and I would like to introduce you my pizza-licious co-hosts, starting with the one who's actually in, quote-unquote, studio, Fuzz. Welcome to Austin.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to be here. Can't believe I'm actually recording this in the same room with you. It's weird.
And you're still looking at your computer while doing that.
I still have my computer in front of me, yes.
And of course, our other co-host, who is calling in via Skype, we've got Steve. Steve, how you doing?
I'm well, thank you. I'm well. It's definitely different from my in-studio experience with the reverb. You must be in a carpeted location this time around.
Partially.
Hey, Sammy, there's carpet over there where the kitchen table, so there's tile.
Yeah.
We're at Chad's house here, so because my internet's not up yet. So,
thank you, Chad.
You're all welcome. I'm not used to a mic, sorry.
That's okay.
So we have a live studio audience, although he might not say anything.
Yes.
But he could say whatever he wants.
Yes, he's feel free to.
All right, so let's get right to it. Let's go to the news. Starting off with the Star Wars movies returning to theaters in 3D, beginning 2012. Starting with The Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
Excited? Anybody?
No.
Bueller.
Mm-mm.
Bueller.
Oh, all I know, there's a lot of kids in foreign countries with jobs right now.
But the original trilogy might be pretty cool to see in 3D.
Yeah.
If he used the proper version of the movie.
Well, according to him, it's the proper version now.
The George Lucas approved.
Yes.
That's what I call it. I don't call it proper.
Yeah.
But that's just my humble opinion. So we're going with, he's actually doing them in order this time. So instead of having Star Wars Empire and then Jedi, he's doing episode 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I don't know. It doesn't say if he's doing it once a year or if he's.
I think it's every couple years.
Okay.
Oh God.
And, well,
well, you got to milk it for as long as you can, right?
Yeah, obviously.
You could also look at it this way. This way is maybe he's focusing on the one movie. Doing a proper 3D up conversion, which, my opinion of 3D up conversions.
Well, of everything, at least in this case, Industrial Light and Magic is doing the conversion. So I'd hope if anybody's going to do a decent conversion, they have the skills to do it.
Well, I don't know how new this process is. So, although, how long ago was Clash of the Titans?
That was
only about a year and a half, right?
Yeah, it wasn't very long ago.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think of how old the 3D up conversion really is. So. One good thing I hear, and I don't think we have this in the news, on Twit, Sarah Lane actually had an interview with some of the makers of Tron Legacy. And they actually played a bit where she was talking to the director, I don't remember. For Current Geek Weekly, so currentgeek.com. Check out the last Current Geek Weekly, and you'll near the end they talk a whole bunch of Star Trek, but then they talk to or then they have play the audio of an interview, which I think it was a video interview,
right.
And might end up being on the Twit Specials feed. And he said, and it was actually filmed in 3D.
Right. So they used actual 3D.
Right. Yeah. So I think the up conversion is only when the computer graphics, which shouldn't be that big of a deal.
All right. That should be easy to do.
That makes me very, very happy.
Well, I think they always said from the onset that that movie kind of screamed to be in 3D as far as made that way, because it just kind of goes with the flow. And have we gotten any sort of confirmation yet as to, because I'm kind of expecting the sort of Wizard of Oz sort of reveal where everything's in 2D in the regular world until he gets zapped, and then when he wakes up,
I don't think
up,
we got confirmation if we do have that. That would be very cool. Yeah. And I would love to see that.
Yeah.
And that would be a good use of 3D.
Right.
Is to kind of make that distinction between the two worlds. Could you see The Matrix in 3D?
Parts of it, yeah.
Now, would you? Would
I could
you
see
have...
the parts when he plugs in 3D, similar to like we're talking about.
Oh, yeah. Like,
but I like yeah, just kind of where they're trying to show it in a funky.
What about the reverse though?
Like the real world would be
the
in 3D?
Real world in 3D because it's the real world, and then computer generated none.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that could work.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think.
Yeah, I'd be kind of bored with seeing him walking around in 3D. This is like, you know, they're just sitting around in the chair. So, you want to plug in? What's that mean? You know, all that kind of. Oh, God. Right. Now, the fight scenes in the later Matrix, sure.
Well, I think it makes sense from the standpoint of as that trilogy moves forward, you spend less and less time in the actual Matrix and more time in the real world. So,
because the first one, you were in the outside in the real world for like all of what, 20 minutes or less.
Right.
And I think the last movie was practically all of it.
Yeah, I don't think they really spent anything.
They went in to do like some quick missions or something.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, so.
Nah.
Moving on. Robert Zemeckis plots return to live action and time travel.
Yeah, I put this in here. I didn't realize that he has not made a live action movie in quite some time. So I just thought it was kind of funny because I didn't realize that. I think they said Castaway was the last actual movie he made with real people.
Mm-hmm.
So everything else has been animated. Polar Express, Beowulf, Christmas Carol, that's all been animated stuff. And then I just think it's kind of funny that he's actually, the next real person movie he's going to make involves time travel. No, it's not a Back to the Future sequel or whatever, but somehow it's going to involve time travel. So,
time travel pitch called Timeless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that could be interesting.
Yeah.
All right. And...
yeah, then this next one, I put it in here, not really movie-related per se, but everyone probably has heard at some point that Stephen J. Connell died last week at 69, and he has had his finger in television for a long time. The list of shows that he has been a producer on or a writer on, it's longer than my arm, I believe. You know, it's, and since we did the A-Team this year, I kind of thought that, you know, we'd put in here, there's a lot of geek television in his stable of work. So
the A-Team, the Rockford Files, 21 Jump Street, Wise Guy, Hunter, the Commish. I love the Commish.
No.
And the greatest American hero.
That's right there, man. That's like my favorite one of his shows.
I don't know. I really like the commission, A-Team.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
Oh, yeah, the A-Team. I mean, the A-Team was, you know, for the time that it was out, and my mentality at the time that it was out was great. But I think out of all those shows, The Greatest American Hero is probably the only one that I would, like, actively watch again.
It was an awesome show. Yeah.
So.
Even, you know, thinking of Beretta and the Rockford Files and... yeah, I mean, he when you think of definitely what he's added.
Yeah,
he definitely set the stage for a lot of things that are out there today.
Yeah, he's touched a lot of subject matter when it comes to television drama and comedy.
Even
and
Hardcastle and McCormick.
Oh, yeah, Hardcastle and McCormick.
I haven't seen that in forever.
Yeah, so... I just thought it was fitting, you know, like I said, not exactly movie related, but he's so wrapped up in probably the amount of remakes that are going to be coming out for the next 5-10 years.
The brand new Rockford Files.
I hope they remake Silk Stockings.
Yeah. No, 21 Jump Street. I would love to see a 21 Jump Street movie in based in that time.
Yeah.
What was that, the early 80s or something?
Yeah, Johnny... Actually, it was like the late
80s.
Johnny
Depp was in there.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on.
Oh, I did... Oh just randomly, before we leave news, just FYI, IMDb, didn't realize this, celebrating 20 years.
Oh, really? Hey. Wow. They've done some changes to it.
Yeah, hate the news site.
I don't like the news site. Yeah, it looks like... Now that they've been bought out by Amazon.
Maybe just me curmudgeonly being like, it's old, it's new, it's changed, I don't like it. Maybe Amazon's, I'll get used to it.
Amazon's owned IMDb for a long time. Yeah. So I think this was just a regular IMDb change. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it was...
Well, they made it look exactly like Amazon now. I'm like, thank goodness I have it on my iPhone.
I have some good things and bad things about it. You know, I kind of like the basic presentation, the basic information all really big. But I wish it had more of the easier...
I want my sidebar back.
I want the sidebar, too. I want the sidebar back, too.
But to jump into corporate speak mode, they're preserving their brand identity.
Yeah, seriously.
Okay. So,
well, it was a lot easier to find out when movies were being released and find trailers and all that kind of stuff, so...
Yeah.
Whatever. But I do like my app on my iPhone much better. If you have not downloaded the free IMDb app, you're a loser.
It's my friend. It is my friend for sure.
Mm-hmm. If only Wikipedia had one.
Well, I thought they did. You could download the entire Wikipedia. It's like 40 megabytes or something. I'm going to say it's megabytes, but I think it's bigger.
I was going to say.
It's maybe 240 or something like that. I don't know. In any case, shall we move on?
Yes.
Sure. I don't mind, but you better promise me I'll be back.
Where's that from? And back in time, we've got 1981's The Howling.
Yeah.
Starring Dee Wallace, Patrick McNee, Richard Picardo.
Robert Picardo.
I can read. Yeah, thank you. Christopher Stone, Doc. Elizabeth Brooks. I know. I just read it wrong. John Carradine and Slim Pickens. Is that Marcia? That sounds like a... That sounds like a horror's name.
Oh, wow.
Anyways. So, movie reporter goes to meet a guy who they think is killing some people. He rapes her, and she gets traumatized, and she's told to go to this colony thing. And werewolf ensues.
That's a quick and dirty version.
I wasn't trying to be very accurate.
First off, I have to say this right now, just because I watched this whole freaking movie, and I went through the whole thing, didn't look at the cast list, other than I was like, wow, where do I know her from? And I'm like, the light bulb went out. I'm like, oh my god, it's the mom from E.T., which was the next movie she did after this.
Mm-hmm.
Went and watched the whole movie, and then when I was doing some of the show notes, I looked it up on IMDb, and I'm like, wait a second, Robert Picardo? That's the doctor from Star Trek Voyager.
Yeah, I was reading that, and I'm like, I don't recognize him.
Oh my god! So yeah, mm-hmm. I couldn't believe it. I was like,
Star-studded cast.
Yeah.
At that time, probably not considered stars.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Slim Pickens was a star back then.
Yes,
and Robert Carradine.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Carradine was the crazy old werewolf.
Yeah, I mean, this movie is kind of strange. I remember seeing this movie, and that's why I put this little thing down here in the show notes. I remember seeing this movie when I was younger. I did not see it in 1981. I know that for a fact. I must have seen it after it came out on video, or maybe it was on cable.
Betamax.
But I know I was pretty young when I saw it. Probably too young. but I do not remember any of the movie other than the very end. I watched the whole beginning of this movie, and I'm like, am I watching the right movie? Because I don't remember any of this going on at all.
Well, this is one of those movies that's been pieced in so many documentaries about horror movies, and you know, this scene shown here and this scene shown there. So I think once you actually sit down and you watch the whole thing, for those of us who have seen all those pieces and different things, you're kind of like, oh, that's how they strung it together. You know, it's kind of like weird.
Right.
Because I think we're all, you know, the transformation scene where her husband gets bitten by the werewolf and transforms and all that stuff. And, you know, some of this, the fight between her and Robert Picardo's character, Eddie.
Right.
You know, and some of the different aspects, like we'd all seen these little scenes pulled out. But, you know, sometimes when they put it back into context and you watch the whole thing strung together, you're like, wow. Because I think for me, when I went to rewatch it, you know, I forgot that it was so much of it was set in the city at the beginning. Do you know? Because it seems so weird. Because when we think of werewolf movies, we don't think of werewolf movies in the city.
Right.
Other than American Werewolf in London.
Well, what kept freaking me out with the whole thing was the fact that I guess I'll admit that I wasn't really paying too much attention in the beginning of this movie, because I found the beginning of the movie boring.
Ditto.
But
middle.
I didn't really realize, I couldn't figure out what city they were supposed to be in. Because, I don't know, maybe because it's so old, I wasn't picking up on the fact that it was supposed to be L.A.
And I thought it was New York.
I thought it was New York, too, mainly because of the cops. The cops came off very New York to me, and a lot of the TV reporters came off as very New York to me. So I was really confused by that. I think the cops kind of had that New York sort of attitude when they were talking amongst themselves, you know? So I was really confused on the setting of this movie, and it kept getting worse throughout the rest of it, because, people had accents that they shouldn't have had.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, what the hell is going, where is they supposed to be? And I had to actually rewind it and go back and like, and I'm like, okay, they're in Los Angeles. This thing is supposed to be north of Los Angeles. So I'm like, are they in Louisiana or San Francisco? I'm like, I don't understand what's going on.
Right.
So that was a little confusing. Yeah,
it doesn't really come to make sense until they start talking about, you know, how the doctor found them all and brought them to the colony, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Especially Slim Pickens, because he's like straight out of, you know,
straight
out of Tennessee or Alabama.
I'm like, what is this guy doing here? Where did he come from? Like, he just didn't fit. I was like,
why the hell does his name sound like a porn star? I mean, seriously. Slim Pickens?
Slim Pickens, yep.
Unless he was, and they just, I don't know. Yeah. I don't even want to go there. I'm not touching that.
So, I mean, there were some memorable things in here. I remember everybody talking about the transformation scene. That was what got people, I think, in the theaters to see this movie when it came out, because it was
Robert Picardo.
Yes,
the Eddie, when Eddie transforms.
Yes, yep. It was considered. I think they, like, I could be wrong here, but I think they considered making this movie rated X for that reason.
For the change?
Because the change was considered so gruesome and realistic that it was like...
That was gruesome and realistic?
For 1981.
Well, for 1981. I mean, and you'll notice, too, if you watch the trailer that I found for this movie, it's the red band. And really, the only thing red band about it is really the transformation.
The transformation.
Which I thought was interesting.
So, you know, I remember it being kind of...
That deserves a red band?
I remember it being really controversial. 1980? Yeah, man. This is before PG-13. You know, so this was long before. I'm pretty sure that if this movie had come on, you know, on cable in 1981 or whatever, this would have been one of the movies that my parents would have been like, you need to go upstairs. Yeah. You can't watch this movie. You know, so, yeah.
Oh, yeah. But you have to admit, though, that, well, I mean, we have to think about it being the 80s when this was all happening, and this was the high time of all the practical effects.
Right.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just look at Thriller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is probably, I think that was more like 83 or something, but.
Yeah. But
that is the best werewolf transformation, I tell you. It's Thriller. And.
Hey, that's it. Thriller was an event.
Yeah.
People, it was like people had Super Bowl parties to come watch the premiere of the Thriller video. Seriously, I'm not joking.
Well, it
was a big deal.
The one thing I like about a lot of Michael Jackson movies or videos is they're usually a short film in some way. They're not just a music video.
Right.
And I love those, mainly probably because I love musicals, but
now, considering this movie was made in 1981, here's the thing. I don't know. I found a lot of these pieces of this movie funny, and I don't know if they were going for that or not when it came out. Like, if they were going for a legitimately kind of this is going to be a scary movie, sort of deal. But I found a bunch of it funny. Just some of the characters, especially when they make it to the colony. Crack me up. Freaking, I'm like, oh my god, there's Elvira, Mistress of the Dark.
Yeah.
Well,
I
know it's not her, but, you know, it sure is not good about it.
The two gypsies living right in the middle of, like, the suburban couple next to the country sheriff.
Right.
You know, next to the old man who just wants to kill himself. I can't handle it. Yeah, but you've got all these wackadoos just all kind of running around next to each other and trying to figure out what's going on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When it comes to the actual, you know, effects and everything, like, this is one of those movies where I've talked about in the past where it's like the practical effect, even though, okay, let's all be realistic.
Mm-hmm.
Today, we could not keep, you know, we couldn't keep our attention span long enough for as long as it took these werewolves to change. You know,
that's true.
You know, you know, when we watch this now and we're sitting here watching Robert Picardo go rawr, 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 and she's sitting there screaming for 5 minutes.
Right.
I'm like, bitch, get out of there. You know, I'm like, jump out the window, do what you got to do. He's in the middle of changing. He's clearly not paying attention to you.
Right. Well, like,
y'all okay?
No, we're fine.
Oh, that's just ice.
That's just ice. Okay.
Just checking.
We're good.
Okay. Do I need to call 911? We're good.
No, we're good.
Okay. But watching the effect itself was way cool. You know, and those practical effects will never be done again.
Oh, I'm a huge fan of practical effects. When I was a teenager, me and my best friend Jim, we would scour the video rental places to find the bloodiest, goriest, you know, we were the guys who bought the Fangoria magazine and went through it all.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, I mean, we were totally into all that stuff. So when I see this stuff, it's just like, wow, I really wish they would kind of go back to doing it that way, because to me, a lot of times, I think it looks better, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I made a note here, too. Like, I remember reading about all of these things in Fangoria, so I'm glad I'm not the only one in this group that was a Fangoria fan.
We were saving up the money to buy the full halved torso so we could have it in the yellow.
That'd be awesome.
We thought it was the coolest thing. So.
Go ahead, Jeff. Sorry.
I almost think that if they did the practical effects today with the resolutions of the cameras, it would actually look worse.
Yeah. Maybe.
That's true.
I think. So don't quote me on that, because they've done some really great makeup effects. Maybe that it would look better just because makeup effects have gotten better, as well as the visual effects.
Right.
It's just whenever somebody thinks of morphing from one thing to another, they always think digital technology will blend the two together better.
Right. Well, I don't think technically I don't think film cameras, I mean, you're shooting with a film camera basically. Straight up film is way pretty much high resolution.
Mm-hmm. Because it's dealing with light instead of pixels.
Right. Pickles? So I don't know if that argument would hold up, though. I can see it, though, because I noticed that I nitpick a ton of stuff now when it's on Blu-ray or whatever on an HDTV, and I'm like, ugh, that just doesn't look right, you know. But I think if the source material I think is from an actual film camera, I think technically it's still HD,
higher res, yeah. Quote unquote.
Well, this is definitely one of those movies where the story is interesting. Air quotes interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they're trying to figure out, like we talked about at the very beginning, we're talking about a news reporter who's trying to figure out who this serial killer is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of interesting, in its own little way. And then, you know, she gets traumatized when the police come in and shoot the killer, supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
She gets talked into going to this colony where she comes to find out, you know, all these people are weird, and she's not figuring out what it is that's going on there. Then her husband gets seduced by the werewolf lady, Elvira.
Elvira.
Elvira. She looks creepy, by the way. That woman looked really creepy.
So Elvira's real name is Marcia?
Yes. Marcia. And so Marcia seduces him, turns him into a werewolf. Her friends come up trying to help and get killed in the process, you know, all kinds of stuff, until you have the big party at the end where they're going to try to turn her into a werewolf, and, you know, death ensues and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And I think, I mean, as we watch this, you know, definitely we think how long it takes. You really realize how long it takes them to transform, you know, right. And all this kind of stuff. When you think of, you know, Twilight, you just see, like, you see him just go, bling, and I'm going to change.
He just jumps, you know, and turns
into, he just
and
jumps and turns into a wolf. You know, at least in Underworld, it took them a second, you know, to go from human to lichen. You know, it showed that there was some kind of dramatic change. Which, by the way, I think the Underworld transformation, it, as far as CG goes, is probably the best. That looked pretty good. You know, but you see how hard it is for everything to happen, and you wonder why that people can't kill them quicker, you know, in this movie.
Yeah, that was a sticking point with me through the whole thing. I was kind of like, run, do something, hit them with a stick, I don't care.
Yeah, throw a rock at them and get out of there, you know.
Funny thing, when I was doing some of the research for the for this, I inevitably had to look up, because there's been like 4 or 5 sequels to this movie.
Oh God, they're all
awful. I think they hit 6.
Yeah. So one of the things that I found out, I was reading through, I've never seen any of these sequels. The Howling 4, which is called The Original Nightmare, is a sequel to The Howling, but it is, and I didn't know this, I guess there was a novel called Howling.
Mm-hmm. It's all based on a novel.
Right, that's what the original film was based on. But I'm stealing from Wikipedia here. The film's story bears a close resemblance to the plot of the first film, and in fact is a much more faithful adaptation of the original Howling novel than the original film. I'm reading through the plot points, and it's pretty much toe-to-toe with the first one. They just, some of the things are changed. There's a girl who runs into a serial killer, and she ends up having to go to, you know, it's basically toe-to-toe with this movie. So it's kind of funny that it was, like, remade, sort of. But
the fourth movie is basically the remake of the original.
Yeah.
And Michael T. Weiss is in that movie.
Yeah, so I just thought it was funny that they did that.
No, I agree. You know, and I also love, you know, one of the things I love about watching older movies like this one, especially 80s movies, which is awesome, are the soundtracks. Now, you know, how many boings did we have to hear, you know, or like the scary points when they go, it just sounded like they put all their fingers on the keyboard. Ding! You know, like when the friend Pam, is it Pam?
Mm-hmm.
The one that was there, she's like walking along and all of a sudden she hits the wind chime and it goes like ding, you know, like somebody just like hit like 3 keys on the keyboard and you're like, okay, they could have come up with something a little more exciting than that.
The wind chimes?
It definitely, yeah. It definitely has, like, you know, 70s, 80s porno music pumping all through it, and that's not just in the porn shops scenes. You know, I just thought the sounds were really interesting, you know, and it's definitely, it did not date very well.
Definitely not.
It has not held up as far as the date goes, but they definitely captured the 80s
very well. You know, there was a point where I thought that this movie was older than it was. Without looking up when it was made, I'm looking at the first, you know, 30 minutes of this movie, and I'm like, this movie's got to be from the late 70s.
Right, like, I was thinking early 70s myself, but that was just me.
Well, I mean, conceptually, you know, everything got started with it in 79, filmed in 80, released in 81.
Mm-hmm.
So it's right at that time,
right?
You know, where, you know,
So technically, it was filmed in the 70s.
Yeah, technically. So it's worth, I mean, but it's worth seeing because it's definitely lays some foundation to a lot of things. A remake, it wouldn't hurt to have a remake to bring it to the new millennia, but I don't know that the remake would have the impact that this one did.
Because didn't they already do the remake with the Howling 4?
Yeah. Well, my point more is, I mean, other than the group mechanic in this movie, where you've got a pack of werewolves living together, you know, we just had the Wolfman out not too long ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true.
Really, there's not a whole lot you can do to the wolf, you know, werewolf genre to change it up a whole lot. So, don't know what you would do with this in a remake to make it updated, I guess.
Yeah, more
action, true. Faster transition.
More action would help. You know, like I said, I found myself incredibly bored in the beginning of this movie. So
yeah, well, they would definitely have to add about 20 minutes to the movie,
you know,
because the transitions, then turning into werewolves would be a lot, you know, a lot more.
Well, I was thinking maybe if I was straight and I was, like, enticed by the typical late 70s, early 80s breast shots that are in this movie, that I may have been more entertained, but, you know.
Now, if for some reason, I wish I had the sound effect, boobies!
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 Just a little film sack shout out there.
Right. So. But, yeah, you know, this is one of those movies that, you know, like Rick Baker, you got to really see what he was doing with stuff at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And how much of an innovator he was, you know. And so, you know, it is what it is. You know, it was the first real scary movie that was kind of out there. Well, clearly probably the first scary movie of the 80s. It definitely set a tone for the things that were to come, and definitely a lot of homages go back to it. You know, is it the best film ever made?
Heck nah.
But again, like a lot of the things that we've seen, you know, some cool people came out of the movie. It definitely has not aged well, but that's okay because it definitely set trends for the future, and a lot of people still refer back to it as one of the originals, you know, and that's definitely why I wanted us to see it.
No. I'm glad you put it on there. It was actually kind of a trip down memory lane to see it.
Yeah, it's one of those kind of things. And I did laugh that when we go through the what we learned, somebody was clearly on the same path as I was. On all my notes, I was just like, oh my gosh.
These were all me, man. I was on a spree.
Well, one of the things that I like in the trivia here, and I don't know, it says to add to the hidden puns. I don't know if this one's too hidden. There's a book placed near a phone during one scene. Ellen Ginsberg's howl.
Mm-hmm. They had a lot of wolf puns in this.
There
movie.
Was a ton of wolf stuff in the movie. Yeah,
yeah.
The wolf chili one is kind of funny because I guess wolf chili actually exists as a brand. And I was talking about this at work, and this lady's like, yeah, we've been getting, there's commercials for Wolf Chili on TV. And I'm like, I don't really watch TV, so I don't see commercials that often. So I was like, wow, okay. So I just thought it was funny. Yeah, they had Wolf Chili, the book howl, the picture above their bed had a wolf in it. The was it Wile E. Coyote was on the cartoon on the TV.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, they were. That's kind of why I had the like. Were they trying to be funny in this because of all those little things they kept sticking in? So.
Well, and I liked the reference, which of course I didn't get at the time because they're definitely older actors. But that all of the a good portion of the characters were named after directors who had actually made werewolf movies.
Oh, okay, yeah. Like, see, I didn't catch that either. So
yeah, but I mean, when you go back and look, and you're like, how interesting is that? You know, you put it together, and you're like, that's intelligent writing. You know what I mean? Right. You just don't think about that.
Yeah. So, yeah. With that being said, and this movie being considered such a sort of benchmark for the werewolf movie of time, what have we learned, Jeff?
What we've learned. We've learned from this movie that L.A. cops can magically shoot through doors. Nuns shop at occult bookstores.
Porn stores.
No, that was just the occult store. We didn't see them in the porn.
Okay.
Doesn't matter where you go, all sheriffs have southern accents. Werewolves have a really, really long time to transform, and victims are paralyzed with fear and are unable to A, run, or B, shoot. Mazdas were an exclusive ride back in 1981, and not everyone was lucky enough to own one.
I loved this quote from the movie, by the way. We don't all have the money for a Mazda, man. I loved that.
I was cracked up.
Chuckled. Anyway, sorry.
Werewolves have the strength to tear holes in metal freezer doors, but are utterly defeated by aged wood and glass. Despite their exclusivity, it only takes a couple of gunshots to make a Mazda explode. And that is what we learn from The Howling. I've only got one thing to say about this movie.
So, yeah, Jeff was enthralled with it. I thought it was slow. Kind of bizarre, and mainly because, I didn't understand really what they were going for with the funny stuff. But it was funny. I don't know if it was intentionally supposed to be funny, but I was cracking up at some things. If you're a fan of horror movies or you're a gore fan, definitely check this movie out, because this movie kind of raised the benchmark for a lot of movies to follow. So.
Yeah.
Check it out.
Agreed. And, you know, it was definitely amazingly innovative for the time. It, you know, it hasn't aged well, but it's still a classic. And if you get time, to get the deluxe DVD version and watch some of the interviews and some of the stuff that they talk about, you know, what they, you know, when they were actually filming the movie, you know, you learn a lot of interesting things. Like, this is one of those first movies where they took the lore that was out there and then created their own lore to go along with it as well.
Right.
You know, so they, you know, to make it better for movies, you know, they kind of added certain things like werewolves can transform whenever they want to, you know, certain things, you know, that they added in, you know, so that it made more sense for the flow of the movie. You know, which we see that like, more. Yeah, they kept some of the things tried and true, but at the same time, you know, they adapted it for the needs and to keep the audience interested and that type of thing. So, you know, just think about it. It's worth seeing, especially if you're a fan of the genre.
All right. Where were we? We were here. And in the present, we went to see Let Me In, directed by Matt Reeves, starring Cody Smit-McPhee, Chloe Moritz, Richard Jenkins, and Cara Bono. And this is a remake of the Swedish or Finnish?
Swedish film,
Let the Right One In.
Mm-hmm.
So who actually enjoyed this movie?
Oh, I enjoyed it.
Definitely.
Yeah,
definitely
I mean,
enjoyed it.
Okay, I'll let you guys stop.
All right. Well, first I have to ask. It's obvious Jeff didn't like. Why did you not like the movie, Jeff?
I was just bored.
Okay.
It just really? Through the entire movie, bored. I hated the kid, the boy.
Okay.
I just there was just something about him that I just. was like, couldn't wait until this movie was done. Also, I saw this at an early showing, which was in a regular but older theater.
Mm-hmm.
up in the Arboretum area, the Arbor Hills theater there, and it was kind of an awful place. It was an early showing, so it was packed, and so there wasn't really much room, and it just, I wanted to leave.
Yeah.
So not, maybe not, it was wrong. Partly where I saw the movie, but yeah, I was just so bored and didn't like the kid. I couldn't show any sympathy or empathy with him.
Okay.
The girl seemed more interesting to me.
Oh yeah, well definitely.
Oh yeah, but she definitely was.
I mean, I don't really think we're giving anything away here, although I noticed she had kind of put it here in the notes. I'm going to ask this. We said it's a remake of a Swedish film, which garnered a whole bunch of awards in 2008. And it was also based on a novel, I believe. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Which was really, really popular in Sweden. I have not read the novel. I have seen the original film. I unfortunately only saw a dubbed version of it. I have yet to see it in the original Swedish. But I really, 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 really enjoyed the original.
Oh, you saw a dubbed version? I saw only the one with subtitles, so I've seen the original Swedish.
I saw a dubbed one, and normally I go for ones that aren't dubbed, but I couldn't find it. I really liked the original. For a remake, though, this was okay. Did you see the original, Steven? You said yes.
Yes. Okay. If you watch it on Netflix streaming, it's the subtitle version. Okay. So with the original Swedish.
Okay.
And that's where I saw it. And actually, I saw it after the first one. I had every intention of watching it beforehand just to see, to be able to compare, but I didn't want to go in jaded to the film, so I went ahead and watched the film and then came pretty much right home and watched it on Netflix streaming. And you know, I think there were aspects of the Americanized version that I appreciated better than Swedish version. But there were also some pieces of the Swedish version that made the story better. Do you know what I mean? It was definitely much practically made. Get into comparing the two too much, but
right. I'm curious though. What parts of the American version did you like better? Like, what Americanized things did you?
Yeah, I liked the whole aspect of, I guess when she transferred vampiric blood from one person to the next, without giving too much away. I kind of liked that storyline much better than the like half an hour storyline that it took in the Swedish version.
But it cut out my favorite scene.
I know, but I wouldn't have missed that scene. Which are truthful of you. Where you're like, I missed it. I wouldn't have missed it. I guess because totally I'm not a cat fan. I'm not a cat fan, so that didn't really dug.
I just thought it was funny. I guess I didn't really understand why they changed some of the things they changed.
Yeah.
I
don't get the flashback scene from the beginning of the American.
I don't understand that mechanic at all. I don't know why they did that. Yeah. Why start that off in the middle and then go back? It made absolutely no sense to me. They did focus more on the relationship between the protector and the girl in this movie.
Yes.
In this version. That was really kind of left up. It was almost kind of like a sort of a revealed thing. Or like you kind of had to figure that out in the original. Like, you weren't really sure who that guy was until a certain point in the film. You know, where they come off really early in this one and saying, you know, this is somebody that's been with her for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not her dad, but, you know. All in all, though, I did enjoy the movie. You know, I didn't hate it. Normally, a lot of times when a European film is remade for America, I tend to really not like the remake at all. I could stand to recommend people go see this remake without saying, hey, you have to go see the original one. Things I thought that were strange was, I think they made the kid come off way creepier in the American one than this, the original. I think maybe if, Jeff, if you watched the original, you might empathize more with the kid, because he comes off much more as just like a normal kid who's bullied, sort of.
Yeah.
You know, so you're
he does come off like he, in the American version compared to the Swedish version, he does come off like potential serial killer.
Oh, the scene in the beginning when he's got that mask on? I'm like, what is going on here? He's like watching everybody in the courtyard. You know, they made him much more of a voyeuristic sort of guy than in the Swedish one, where he's just kind of a kid who's kind of watching what's going on around him and knowing what's kind of going on, because he spends all his time out in the playground in the middle of the apartment complex. Mm-hmm. You know, but this one is much more, it's intentional. He's where he's watching the two people make out on the couch, and it's just a little bit more creepy.
Stalking a victim. Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah, he doesn't really come up with someone that you really want to empathize with right off the bat. Although I would have, I don't remember them. Well, in the American one, did you notice that they completely never showed his mom?
They never showed her face. Yeah, not very often. Yeah, exactly.
They never showed her face. Anytime they showed her face, it was completely blurred out of focus. Whereas in the Swedish one, you actually got to see her, and you got to see his dad. Mm-hmm. And they kept him very separate in this version.
Yeah,
very isolated, I guess, is what they were going for.
I guess they were just really showing, they were trying to show that this kid was on his own.
Right.
You know, and trying to make his own choices. Just not, didn't have the, didn't really have, what am I trying to say, the intelligence or life experience to be able to make the choices he was being asked to make.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's why he was making the choices he was, like, to try to fight. And it showed how easily influenced he was by the vampire.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Very much so.
But at the same time, like, some of those other aspects we're talking about, like, I completely wrote the note. The subtle uses of CGI in this movie were horrible.
Oh, I hated it.
They were subtle?
They definitely, I mean, yeah, they were bad. Well, I mean, it wasn't, the whole movie wasn't CGI, but the few scenes where CGI was used were just so bad. I mean, they made her turn from, like, a human into Gollum.
Yes.
And it just didn't make sense. Like, you could have used practical effect. You know, and if you watch the Swedish version, again, sorry not to keep going back to that, but they didn't use CGI at all, and it looked just as fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you,
I think they used it a little bit for the cat part, but other than that, it was all practical and all just the actors acting, basically.
Yeah. Which, and I think that was part of what I thought was cool, was like, you know, she would show up on a 10th floor of a hospital, and you're like, how'd she get up there?
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas in the American version, you watch this Gollum creature climb up to the 10th floor of the hospital.
I don't think they needed to do that, too, either.
Yeah.
So if they didn't show that in the original...
Well, they did show it, but what they did it differently, sort of. One of the things they kept focusing on in the American version was they kept, and you kind of put this in the notes, I believe, this was you, Steven, about knowing that she was a vampire right away.
Mm-hmm.
Because they kept doing things like they would show her feet, you know, she's standing out in the snow, and, you know, she doesn't have any shoes on, and obviously it doesn't bother her. Where they didn't emphasize that in the original, and he asked her, like, aren't you cold? You know, and she's like, no, I'm okay. But it wasn't like an outright, like, okay, I'm a vampire, so I'm going to be standing here where I shouldn't be. Or, you know, they weren't bringing it to light as fast. And the scene that you're talking about with her going to the 10th floor, I remember this because I stopped and watched that scene more than once, only because it's very subtle. You see the external of the hospital, and then the camera stays completely motionless. And out of the corner of your eye, all of a sudden you see a figure climbing up the top of the building. But it's not, like, emphasized at all. In the American one, the same scene, they tilt the camera up so that you're forced to follow her as she climbs up. So it's like they're kind of, like, leading you to say, hey, you've got to, you know, watch this person climb. where the Swedish one, it was like, because I'm sitting there, I watched the nurse fall out, and I'm like, I didn't notice her climbing up the building right away, and I'm like, why are they holding on the scene so long? I'm missing something.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I
so
was
I
looking
rewound
at that
and
too.
Watched it again. I'm like, oh, she's climbing up the building. Sweet. You know?
And I remember the audience when I was watching this movie, and, you know, that everybody, when we're watching it in the audience, and all of a sudden you start seeing the climb occur in the theater. I mean, people in the audience went, oh, you know, like definitely like, wow, we didn't expect that.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
I did.
Well, yeah. Just saying. You know, and but I did assume, I don't know, when I went into this, I thought part of what this was going to be about was he's trying to figure out what she is. You know, so I figured that like a good half of the movie would be kind of like, is she or isn't she a vampire? But no, like within the first 10 minutes, you know. Right. You know what I mean? So that kind of threw that out the window. Although I do have to say it was funny. Our whole audience, the two times that she said this in the movie where she's just like, but I'm not a girl. You know, would you still like me if I'm not a girl?
Right.
The whole audience was like, ah! You know, those were laughable moments in our theater for some reason. But at the same time, I'm just like, if anybody walked up to me and was just like, would you still like me if I was not a girl? I'd be like, then what are you?
What are you? Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, like it's like, but definitely those were, you know, chortable moments in the theater.
Yeah, the reveal came much, much later in the original. It wasn't right out there, and it was still, they did play around a lot more with the whole him kind of trying to figure her out. You know, she didn't come right out and say, yes, I'm a vampire, and they did keep the scene in where she said, you know, we can't be friends.
You know, right.
She's like, we can't be friends. Yeah. That was the same. So there were shots for this movie that were exactly the same as the original, and then they're you know, they had these other scenes that were just complete deviations from, you know, a lot of the protector stuff that was completely changed as far as the methods used. But a lot of it, you know, like I said, it's not too far off the mark from the original, just a little bit. I don't understand why they changed some of the things they do, but
yeah.
I had to Americanize it, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our attention spans are a little bit quicker. You want to see a little more action.
All in all, I think this is a movie that maybe I'd be okay with on DVD, so that I can have a plan on in the background while I'm doing something more interesting.
Aww. Well, I will say though, for the movie that it was, I didn't expect it to be as gory as it was. I mean, I'm a gore fan. You know, as I assume, Fuzz, you are as well, so at times.
Yeah.
But it definitely surprised me, you know, but I think that they were trying to show that very clearly, that even though this is a little girl, this is a vicious vampire.
Yeah, I guess my knowledge of, I think, and that could be completely off the mark here, I think the Swedish kind of Finnish attitude towards gore is a little more accepting than over here, so I wasn't really shocked too much that it was as gory as it was. So that didn't come too much of a surprise. I was actually expecting it to be less gory in the American version than the Swedish one. The
ending, yeah, they kind of kept it pretty.
Really, I was really afraid that they were going to change the ending. You know, so I was really happy that it was shot differently. It had a different camera shot than the original, but it was kept pretty much the same.
So what did we learn?
Well, we've learned that older vampires apparently have personal hygiene issues. We've learned that bullies in the 1980s have really bad hair. No kidding. Well, the kid had bad hair, too. Anyways. It snows in Los Alamos, New Mexico. Have some now, save some for later. And fake snow just doesn't do it. Get the real stuff.
Oh, God, that fake snow in the New Mexico scenes drove me nuts.
That's why Sweden works so much better.
Why did they put it in New Mexico?
I don't know.
Why didn't they have it, like, in Duluth, Minnesota, or something like that?
Someplace where snow actually exists.
Yeah. Chicago.
That was really... When it first said the location, I was really confused. I'm like, New Mexico?
And it's snowing.
There's always snow, and the lakes are iced over.
It doesn't snow in New Mexico. Well, apparently it does. You know, so...
I mean, if they had it in Seattle or...
Yeah, so I...
Yeah, well, definitely
it had to be some little kind of podunk town, you know. Mm-hmm. It can't be, like, some big city.
Oh, yeah.
But definitely something near a lake or something. I would think, like, Duluth would be just fine. And that being on Lake Superior. But.
Yeah, they must have gotten a huge break from whatever town it was they shot in to get that there. I don't know why they picked it. So,
all I can say on this is, meh, it's all right.
yeah, obviously Jeff's not too impressed. I thought it for a remake of a movie, it was not bad. If you've never seen the original, you would not be... You're not going to really miss too much from watching this remake. But I will say that I prefer the original. And if you have the means to see it, go see it.
Steven?
Agreed. And I definitely liked it a lot. I mean, there were definitely some surprises that I enjoyed. And I liked some of the changes from the original, but others just didn't really vibe. But this is one where having the opportunity to watch both the original and the remake is a cool thing.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it as a standalone film. I definitely enjoyed it even more having the other one to watch and be able to compare and contrast, you know, just to have something different. And since they're similarly timed, you know, you had a lot more comparison you can do. You weren't just set on like, oh gosh, they had bad hair in the 80s and you know, the music was bad. You know what I mean? Like you actually could compare them pretty much apples to apples.
Right.
And I thought that was interesting. That was kind of cool.
Honestly, minus a few things, you could have taken a few little details out of this and you would have had no idea what time period the movie was supposed to be in.
So. Yeah, it was pretty timeless in what it has. It didn't seem to be that old. I mean, the cars being older models, I wouldn't think anything of it, especially in a more, you know, a smaller town versus a bigger city. So,
yeah,
it would almost been better if they didn't say where they were or when it took place.
Yeah, really, it's inconsequential. Like, it doesn't matter where they are.
Right. It should be essentially a timeless story and not have anything. I don't know. Maybe that took away something from the story or not. But anyways, let's go into something more interesting.
There's gonna be the future soon. I won't always be this way. When the things that make me weak and strange get engineered away.
In the future, there's the movie My Soul to Take, a Wes Craven joint. starring Max Thiriot. Is that how you pronounce that last name? John Magaro, Denzel Whitaker, Xena Grey, and Nick Lachey.
I thought at first it said Nick Lachey, and I laughed.
Nick Lachey.
But I was like, he's not in this movie.
No. I don't know.
How would you describe what this movie, based off of the trailer, is about?
You want my honest opinion? It's,
yeah.
To me, it's like Scream all over again.
I don't know about Scream. You know what? This is one where I really like the trailer. The trailer was really good looking. Mm.
Yes.
And then when I process what is this about, what intrigues me about it is wondering whether or not the killer is reincarnated. It leaves you wondering, is the killer the kid's father? Mm-hmm. It leaves you wondering, you know, like, what's the connection that they all have about birthdays?
Right.
You know, it's I mean, there are some pieces that are intriguing enough to make me want to see this movie.
I'm probably oversimplifying it, but at a very base level, Scream was a movie that was about who is the killer. Somebody's killing all these people and nobody knows who it is. And at a very base level, without all of the other mechanics of the reincarnation and that, this is another who is the killer movie, sort of.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I guess that I'm boiling it down to that, and that's where I'm making the this is Scream all over again with a couple extra things on top. You know. Don't get me wrong, I like Scream. I may love this movie, but I mean, I have faith in it because I like the people that are making it. I think the trailer came off as very 90210 Team Jacob versus Team Edward, sort of. but that could just mean being old and grumpy. I don't know.
Old and grumpy.
You grumpy old man, you.
Yeah. I didn't quite see it.
Get off my lawn.
Right.
I didn't quite see it that same way. It just seems like another teen horror flick.
Just another teen horror flick. There you go. There's the movie you should make.
Although they already made that
kind of, yes. Which was funny.
I think they call it Scary Movie.
Which was funny. I love that movie. The beginning of that movie is classic. I love the beginning of that movie. That's another podcast. But the talking point that's here, I completely agree. I don't understand if any 3D is really necessary in this movie. Other than another ploy to get more money.
Well, I did find out in my research that it was up-converted. So whether or not it was intentionally meant to be in 3D from the beginning is questionable.
Well, looking at one thing is, I think the horror movie genre might actually be a good genre for 3D.
Oh yeah, it definitely is. It's got a long history.
Looking at the bright side of that.
It's got a long history with 3D. I mean, I
remember
Jaws 3D, Friday the 13th. I remember seeing that in 3D. You know, in the old-fashioned red and blue glasses, you know, and that definitely worked, you know, so it may work. I'm at the point now that I'm so oversaturated with 3D, I'm just kind of like, I just look at it now as like, unless they start making every movie that ever comes out in 3D, I look at it as like, they're just trying to get more money.
Right now.
And I can understand like Tron Legacy, where that totally deserves to be in 3D.
Right, but again, it was shot to be in 3D, you know, so that I could see. It wasn't like, it was done, you know. Right now what we're looking at is every movie that is currently in production or has been in production for the last year and a half, they're currently in some boardroom going, we should upconvert this to 3D, because everybody's doing it. You know?
I think that's just a waste of their money, honestly. Yeah.
So,
because they should have learned somehow, some way, that the best way to have 3D is to film the damn thing in 3D.
But we're still in that process.
If you don't film it in 3D, it's usually practically worthless.
Right. Well, that's the thing. I think what we're going to see is right now you see all these movies that have been in production and have been sort of pushed back so they can do this up conversion. You're going to see all these come out. You're going to see all the movies that are going to be shot in 3D because, you know, it's the thing to do. And it's not until you kind of push through that, and maybe when, you know, they finally realize that just because it's in 3D doesn't mean everybody's going to rush to see it. In fact, I don't know. Yeah. I would love to see the actual box office results done and split and tell me which made more money. Did the real one make more money, or did the 3D one make more money?
Yeah, that's true.
I'm sure they can do it. And I'm sure
there's way too many. There's way too many movies that are being offered in both right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've either got to. You know, I really kind of think that that's kind of a cop out.
Oh, totally.
You need,
because they know there's going to be people that won't pay for it.
Right. You know, but if you have confidence, if you have confidence in your movie, release it how you want it released.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just release it in both and just go, maybe some people will want to see it in this, maybe some people want to see it in this. No. If you spent as a company, made that much, you know, put that much time and investment in it to up convert it because you think it's going to be better, release it that way. You know, that's just my opinion. You know.
Well, also looking at another from another angle, some people can't see 3D.
Right.
For example, yeah, that's true.
Right. I mean, they are a very, very small, you know, minority, but they do exist. I have two of them in my family who cannot see it. So, if they only choice is to spend, you know, $12 a ticket to see this movie in 3D, honestly, those two people are the kind of people that would go, I'm going to wait for it to come out on Netflix.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Get the DVD, I'll watch the 2D version.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I guess getting back to the film itself for a second before we wrap up, you know, it's like, I guess the whole plot of it, the trailer makes it look interesting. At least from my perspective. Definitely makes it look interesting. Doesn't make it seem like it's going to be, campy horror, that it's actually going to be, you know, kind of a who's going to survive and who's the killer, is the killer among us kind of movie.
Exactly.
Wes Craven associated with it, generally a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, generally he hasn't steered us too wrong. A New Nightmare is a little wackadoo, but
I have not seen it, so I can't make a comment.
Compared to some of the other stuff he's done. I love that, you know, there's going back to some of the homages to Nightmare in this, like the hand and the bed. You know, and the bed and stuff like that. There's some homages to the classics in there. It looks like it's going to be interesting. I don't know that I'm going to have time to see it between other things and because this actually is one that comes out this coming Friday, actually. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, distance. It's just one of those ones that looked really interesting, so I wanted to make sure we got it in here because we're not going to get to see it. you know, but if I don't see it now, I'll definitely see it on DVD.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just so that I can get a chance to see what it's going to be about. But, you know, again, my only worry is this whole 3D thing. I'm just like, why? This looks fine without it, at least in the trailer. I don't know what 3D is going to do for this one.
Well, did you notice in the trailer, like, as soon as they said, you know, in 3D, all the next edits and cuts for the trailer were all stuff? You know, the knife coming at the, you know, the door, the ambulance flipping over and coming towards the camera. I'm like, oh, because you know that's the kind of stuff that makes me eye roll. I'm just like, oh, God, you know, don't purposely do stuff like that. It drives me insane. But, I don't have anything against the story of the movie per se. I mean, again, it looks, especially since Wes Craven's attached to it, you know, I have a little more faith that it would actually be kind of scary or freak me out or whatever, you know. So, he did some schooling in Illinois, so I got to root for the home team, you know.
Nice.
Sounds good.
Yeah, you know, all I got to say is I'll pass.
No.
Just maybe I'm just not a horror fan.
Can you think of one that you've liked, like a horror movie that you were like, oh, that was awesome? No.
Unless you count Event Horizon.
I would count Event Horizon, and the funny thing is most people hate that movie. for me, like I said, it's Wes Craven, so I have faith that he's not gonna make crap. I'm usually down with most of his stuff. You know, I was, like I said, a big gorehead in the early mid-80s, so Nightmare on Elm Street and all that was a big, big plus in my list. So I'll definitely probably check this out at some point. Whether I see it in the theater, don't know. But I will definitely check it out eventually.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And, you know, Wes Craven usually delivers, so here's hoping. you know, here's the hoping that it happens again. Still not convinced 3D is necessary, so it will be interesting to me to see I mean, I don't even know that I'm going to even worry about even ever attempting to see this in 3D if I see it. So, unless there's just something that I see it in 2D and go, oh my God, that would look awesome. But I doubt it.
All right.
So, coming attractions for next week, we are going to be watching The Frighteners in the Past. Can't wait for that one. I love that movie. The Social Network. I think there needs to be commentary on that. And 127 Hours.
Just because so many people have been talking about The Social Network, I feel like I've seen the damn movie already.
Oh my God, it's so good. You gotta go see it. Oh my God.
And I'm hearing the opposite. I'm like, this movie's crap. Yeah. Anyways, but that's probably based off of who I hang with and stuff. And also in the future, we'll be talking about 127 Hours, and you will hear me comment, "Dear God, this trailer again!" Every time I go see a movie at the Alamo.
So
there's plenty of ways to contact us. You can go to our website, movies.comesoutloud.com. Shoot us an email at colmovies@gmail.com. We're on Twitter, twitter.com/colmovies, which is essentially a feed to our Facebook page at facebook.com/colmovies. Don't forget to check us out on iTunes. Leave us a review there. We would appreciate it very, very muchly. Also, check out Zune, because we're one of the few Bear podcasts that are on Zune. And I think there is a way to do a review on there. So, for me, for Fuzz, for Steven, good night, everybody.
Hasta la vista, baby.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That'll do, too.
That's the worst goodbye I've ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.
He's looking at you, kid.
Would you still like me if I wasn't a girl?